Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
The Athletic.
Hello and welcome along once again. This is Pod on the Tyne, The Athletic's Newcastle United podcast. Eddie Howe's Newcastle are back. And so are we. George, you're back in the northeast, but only just.
Well, yes, I'm still reeling, I have to say, from my very, 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 very long journey to the Midlands, and I will fill you in on that later. Not just what happened on the pitch, which was extraordinary enough, but definitely a few strange things happened off it, so I'll come on to that. But mainly I'm reeling today and from something quite different, and I do have to sort of take a step back every now and again. And, you know, like we do have personas on this podcast, right? I mean, not sort of on purpose, but as time's kind of gone on, yeah, our own natural personalities kind of come out and then get exaggerated a little bit. I know I'm that sort of the grumpy old man, and that's fair because I'm old and I am quite often grumpy. But there are parts of like the relationships we have on the show which aren't really how they are in real life. So, for example, my constant belittling and badgering of Chris Woff, my colleague, as part of our shtick and things like that. Every now and again, I have to say, mainly for HR purposes, I do love Chris and I am incredibly proud to work with him. It's a fact that I rescued him from a life of destitution at the Evening Chronicle, and I've made him into what he is now. And all this is like a sort of joke, okay? Part of it is like a sort of joke. But occasionally, things do happen that remind you about the part of his personality that gets exaggerated. And that is how, like, deeply fucking weird he is as a human being, right? So today, which is transfer deadline day, and in Newcastle terms, nothing is happening, right? So nothing is happening. Nothing has happened this month. Yes, there's been a lot of noise and whispers around this month, but nothing's actually happened apart from Javier Manquillo leaving. And after every transfer window, Chris and I have to do a piece, basically entitled, you know, Inside the Transfer Window. And if we're being sort of honest, that piece today could just say fuck all and be the end of it. And it probably wouldn't make many people subscribe to The Athletic, but that would be the sort of truth. I'm sorry about this rant, but I just have to do it, okay? I have to get it out of my system. Now, Chris can't break wind without making a Google Doc to like record the fact that he's broken wind. And okay, so that's the kind of guy he is. So before he writes anything, he does a Google Doc. Okay, so I've got a little quiz question which I'd like to involve everyone, including Ollie, our producer. So this will be a test of whether he's listening or not. I want you to guess how many pages on Google Docs about a transfer window in which nothing has happened, absolutely fuck all has happened, Chris has managed to fill. Now, bearing in mind, these are like A4 bits of paper, effectively, but online. So how many pages do you think, Taylor, of notes has Chris made on Google Docs about the transfer window in which nothing has happened?
Well, he's a very thorough young man, isn't he?
So
I'd say a transfer window in which absolutely nothing has happened apart from one player leaving, he's probably made between 40 and 50 pages of notes.
Okay, thank you. Jacob, would you like to make a guess?
Well, I know that he sort of, one of his old man quirks is that he types in about size 28 font just so that he can see everything. So I'm going to go with 61.
Okay, well, I see in online, Ollie has said, oh no, our little chat thing, he said 283 pages. Well, I'm slightly disappointed about that because the answer, Taylor is right. The answer is 47. 47 pages of notes.
I know that boy far too well.
About a transfer window in which nothing has happened. I'd love Chris to explain himself, but also I just don't want to hear what he has to say. That's my rant over. I might just go now.
Chris Wolf, any rebuttal?
Well, that was a very long rant. No, absolutely no rebuttal whatsoever. I'm just really pleased that George had to read through it all.
why are we all here? Couldn't we have just got AI Culkin to read through 47 pages of notes, released that as a podcast, and we could all have 2 hours
having a bath. Here's the thing. I mean, you know, the window has actually been interesting, so I would like people to read this piece when it finally gets written. But Chris's notes are so long that he's had to do a separate note section on the top of his notes to explain what's in the notes.
That is true, actually, yeah.
Fucking
that
hell.
That sounds like the most Chris thing I've ever heard, to be honest.
I am reeling.
Do you use the Harvard referencing system?
There is no order to it, that's the problem. Well, actually, this is slightly more ordered than normal because I did it as I went along, so I've got like dates and the like, but then there is no order to the notes within the notes, so yes.
I do love Chris, but it's like, is it any wonder that I'm grumpy? I mean...
It's just a little peek behind the curtain into the life of a journalist during the transfer window, isn't it? But this is just Chris's day-to-day life, so it's absolutely nothing to do with the transfer window whatsoever. Anyway, we're all here. Jacob's here as well. Jacob, you all right?
Yeah, all good, all good. I had the worst banana of my life about half an hour before joining the podcast, but apart from that momentary disappointment.
No fire alarms recently, though.
No fire alarms recently, and I cannot believe now the reputation I've got within this building from a light-hearted quip.
The athletic arsonist is who you are.
I walk into the lift and people from TikTok turn their back on me. It's got that bad.
What constitutes the worst banana ever?
Good question. It was both a mix...
Chris is taking notes. Can you hear him?
Yeah.
Here we go. He's taking notes. There we go.
It was bruised on the outside, yet somehow dry and almost like dusty on the inside.
Oh,
and
there's
one where
banana.
When you peel it, your finger kind of squidges the top, so you're already a bit dirty before you've even started it. It was really, really, really disappointing.
It's not great, is it? It's not great. It's the last thing you want from a banana, that dust. Ugh, rotten.
Dust. Anybody? No. Dust.
Right. Anyway, let's move on, chaps. That's enough nonsense. We have to apologise as well to the great Gary Speed, who also scored for Newcastle in the Premier League, Champions League, League Cup and FA Cup. We missed him out of our little quiz last week.
No, I didn't. I didn't miss him out.
No, well, I've just said we missed him out of our little quiz.
Yeah, but I don't want to be associated with your we because I said Gary Speed. So I'd like to disassociate myself from that we and point out that I was correct.
All right. Well, apologies to Gary Speed and the 14,000 people who tweeted us to tell us that we'd missed
yes.
it. Incidentally, like Alan from work, Nobby Solano and Shola, he also scored in the UEFA Cup / Europa League as well.
Come on, you Maggies.
Right then, we said we were going to record on Friday, but it doesn't look like Newcastle are going to be completing any transfers today. So we've reverted to our normal slot. But if the club do spring into action, we will update this episode and insert an emergency transfer updated section now. Yeah, so a message from the future here. Nothing happened, Chris, did it?
No, I mean, this was as of sort of Sunday into Monday. The thought from George and I was that this was going to be a potentially busy scramble towards the end because, as we know, Newcastle were going to have to sell if they were going to buy. And so we thought that, obviously, with the Miguel Almirón situation and could he go and then would that facilitate the ability to bring in a midfielder or another position or even maybe multiple players. But the Saudi transfer deadline closed on Tuesday evening. Obviously, Miguel Almirón actually travelled down to Villa Park, as Eddie Howe suggested on Monday, that he hoped that he would, came off the bench, return from illness, and because Newcastle couldn't sell anyone, the message from Eddie Howe after the game was basically that's almost certainly us done. And as we sit here at 12:49 on the Thursday afternoon, the day of the deadline, very much do not expect Newcastle to do anything significant at a senior level, and that means that they end the window having not signed anyone, and the only player who left, it wasn't Javier Manquillo, sorry, as George Colkin called him earlier in his rant, Javier Manquillo did leave to rejoin Rafa Benitez at Celta Vigo, and that is literally the only thing that has happened at the senior level at Newcastle United in a row.
But please read on for another 45 pages.
Chris Wolfstradamus there with his prediction of the end of the transfer window. It's not strictly true that nothing happened, though, is it? Two more in for the women's team, more on them later. Alfie Harrison as well. Is that one being confirmed, Chris?
It hasn't yet been confirmed officially by Newcastle themselves. Eddie Howe did basically confirm it at his pre-match press conference on Monday, although he said that he was not directly involved in it. That was more to do with Paul Midgley, who's the head of youth recruitment, who was brought across from Manchester City. And it's a Dan Ashworth signing for... initially comes in as part of the academy setup. Given the injury situation, who knows if he ends up on the bench at some stage, but his transfer fee, which I believe early, at least to begin with, is initially nominal, if not non-existent, and then over time there would be fees potentially paid, but that does count towards Newcastle's profitability and sustainability calculation. So that's why they also can't spend a lot of money as things stand on youth players, even because although academy itself, the infrastructure behind it and some of the staff are employed, that isn't included within a PSR calculation. The actual signing and registration of players is. And so there's another reason why Newcastle maybe haven't invested as heavily as they would have liked in their youth recruitment this month as well.
Yes, and Johnny King is our new senior physio in from Leicester. But more importantly, perhaps, Georgie's ex-Bournemouth as well. So Eddie Howe will know him well.
Yes, so Newcastle have been looking for a new senior physio since Danny Murphy left the role in December. And King is somebody who worked with Eddie Howe and Jason Tindall at Portsmouth for a few years before also working with the FA.
Bournemouth.
He is highly... What?
Did you just say Portsmouth?
Did I? Well, I said Bournemouth.
I don't know what...
Check the tape.
Check the tape. All right, well, Do I need to do that again? Well, I'll do now because he's fucking interrupted me, little prick. 47 fucking pages. Yes, that's right. Newcastle have been looking for a new senior physio since Danny Murphy left that role in December. King is someone who's worked with Eddie Howe and Jason Tindall at Bournemouth for a number of years before going on to work with the FA as well. So he also knows Callum Wilson, also knows Matt Ritchie. And he's credited with sort of transforming that department down there. So obviously this has been a sort of interesting topic of conversation because Newcastle have had so many injuries this season. So yeah, welcome aboard, and look forward to him getting his teeth stuck into that.
I bet he thought he'd seen the last of Callum Wilson's knees.
Poor bugger.
Looks like there's no more incomings happening, but NUFC are striving for moves for fringe players as well, Chris.
What, to move on, you mean, fringe players? Yes. So to
moves for fringe players, moves out of the building.
God, he's like, he's questioning everything.
So, yes, but in answer to your question, which I now understand, that they are still looking for... Isaac Hayden remains as Newcastle player, as things stand. They have been looking for a loan to him, probably within England. That hasn't been confirmed yet. Jeff Hendrick's situation still in terms of whether he moves to a different club or not, staying where he is, and possibly some youth players as well. But in terms of fringe players actually within Newcastle's squad, they simply don't have enough depth at the moment, given all their injuries, to be able to allow some of the players like Matt Ritchie or Paul Dummett, who's been linked with Ipswich, although Jacob's been found out that there doesn't seem to be any interest from Ipswich there in him, for those sorts of players that Newcastle simply can't let them go. And also from the point of view that Eddie Howe has of them, is not just what they bring in theory on the pitch, but also off it. And so he doesn't want to lose them.
Before we do move on, I now have to give Chris a little bit of love. So having knocked him down, I need to kind of build him up again. It has actually been an interesting window. I mean, it's been horrible sort of being part of it. It's felt sort of quite sort of stressful. But it has been a very different window for Newcastle. Obviously, every window so far, they've post-takeover, they've bought and bought big. And this is the one where they found themselves in this gilded prison where they have the resources to spend but can't spend it. They're hemmed in by FFP, PSR as it's now known. They're hemmed in by all the injuries they've had, and they've had these very interesting dilemmas about what to do, if anything. Ultimately, because they didn't get bids in, they couldn't do anything. You know, they just couldn't do anything. But it's been, it's kind of been very interesting to be sort of inside that in some ways. And the decisions that haven't been taken now, because there haven't been bids, will have to be taken in the summer. So they will still need to bring money in the summer. And, you know, I think it's all teed up to be a big, big window this summer.
Right then, that's enough of that. Let's quickly remind ourselves of the events at Villa Park on Tuesday night.
Nice pick out for Gordon, and Consa looking to get the right side of him. He's done brilliantly, and a good save by Martinez. It's a lovely ball to pick out Gordon. He's going to have to do it on his own though, and he's capable, but that's over. Took a deflection though, it'll be a corner. Watkins missed it and turned in. Scherer from the back to great effect. They lost him in the penalty area. And Scherer turns it home. Another set piece to deal with. It came out to be struck and deflected. And surely they'll turn this in, and they have. It's another one. Scherer in the right place at the right time again. And how about this for Newcastle?
He's possessed his lad. A centre forward to be fair to him.
Four forward here, and Almiron, and Murphy's arriving! 3 for Newcastle! Murphy this time! Lovely turn, that's brilliantly done by Bailey, movement from Watkins, and there's the pass, and this is cash! And pushed away by Dubravka.
Brilliant save.
Watkins, Diaby's gone through the middle, he's been found and he's round the keeper, behind for a corner.
Did well, Gawley, forced them really wide.
I'm hearing from the touchline, 9 added minutes.
Here we go.
Newcastle might get a fourth here. Pullback is a good one. Ah, what a move, saved by Martinez.
Oh, what a save, I mean, but they've got to score.
Big 3 points for Newcastle.
Everyone needs a Fabian Shaw. Everyone needs a Fabian Shaw. Kick it short or kick it far. Defensive skills are wonderful. Oh, oh.
Well, there we go. Everyone does indeed need a Fabian Scherer. George, we said after Fulham that our pressing game was going to be difficult with no bench and that it would be great to grind out a result at Villa Park. Instead, we pressed them as well as ever and we blew them away.
We did. It was a surprise. The whole thing was a surprise.
Was.
The whole... So when I said at the start that I'm still reeling from Villa, I need to kind of go back a step. And for people who...
Is this rant number two?
This is rant number... It's not rant number two, but it's just a bit of context. As you know, I was a late stand-in for Chris, and all joking aside, it was my pleasure to do that. And Chris gave me a lot of help afterwards too. So, but put it into some context. I had to travel down with Luke Edwards, who a friend of the podcast. If you don't know his work, but listen to the Christmas show, you'll possibly have some idea of the personality that we're dealing with. But a man incapable of leaving a 30-second pause for breath. So I've had 8 hours of just listening to Luke talk, which is pretty exhausting in itself. Arrived at a car park in Villa Park. It's an official media car park. And they said, you've got to be back an hour after the final whistle. And it's like, well, you don't really believe that. And so I double-checked again. And it was like, no, you do. And then I spoke to our colleague who writes about Villa, Jacob, other Jacob. And he said, yeah, he was stuck in the car park for the last home game and had to call a number. It's like, well, that's fine. He covers Villa, but we have to get back to Newcastle. So we had this sort of tension, you know, leading into the game, and it was a game that fully expected Newcastle to lose. So it's like, right, I mean, I'm going to, you know, Newcastle are going to lose this game 2-0. I'm going to base my entire night on Newcastle losing 2-0. And that's what's going to happen. We'll make a sharp exit. We'll run back to the car. And then Newcastle were brilliant. I mean, they were excellent. So then that sort of gave another layer of tension, because suddenly I've got to sort of, you know, change my headspace. And Luke, who's with me and is also obviously feeling this tension of leaving, filing his report for the Daily Telegraph. And I have to say that the tension seemed to get to him in in more ways than one. So we're sitting in the press conference room desperately hoping that Eddie Howe's going to arrive before we have to leave. And Luke presses a button on Twitter and suddenly the whole press conference room is full of sex noises from a porn tape. And he's it's not his porn. He just clicked on something on Twitter. But everyone turns towards us and I go bright red, you know, thinking that people think that it's me and, you know, I would never do something like that. So anyway, we've had this kind of huge noise. Eddie Howe walks in, and we really have to go at this point. Eddie Howe walks in, and Luke stands up and basically says, "Hi, Eddie, yeah, we might have to leave halfway through the, you speaking, because George is, for some reason, is stupidly parked in a car park where they close." And Eddie Howe just goes, "Right, okay, fine." And, like, the press officer looks weird. Everyone's, again, turning to us, and the pressure's... And then we did literally have to run back to the car park. In retrospect, maybe this story isn't as funny as I thought it was. Is it?
Oh, it is quite funny.
Is it funny? And we got to the car park and they were closing it. So I'm very pleased.
Well, there you go.
I'm very pleased that we did run. So I still feel like I've lost a week of my life from that whole experience. So albeit it was a very... You've asked me a question about positivity. I'm not sure that I totally share it because I feel traumatised.
That's fair enough. That is fair enough.
But yes, but I think the thing... You asked a question about the game and... Pressed as well as ever. I think what Newcastle did was they targeted Villa. They targeted what Villa do. They play this ridiculous high line. I mean, I know it's been the source of strength for them this season. They did the same thing at St James's on the first day of the season when Newcastle was so impressive. But they did it again, and they did it with injuries, and they persisted in doing it. And so what Newcastle were able to do, they can't do 90-minute pressing because they don't have the resources to do it. But they did target Villa, and as Villa crept up the pitch, as they do, they spun balls in behind, and Newcastle's pacey players run onto it. It was a brilliant tactic. It was a very simple tactic, and Villa proved incapable of changing. It was baffling, but at the end of it, Newcastle come away with an exceptional performance, an exceptional result. The first team to win there since 2023, I think it is, February 2023, and yeah, it was a brilliant night.
Yeah, Chris, we targeted the goalkeeper and the centre-halves, didn't we? But we also played in behind the full-backs regularly. Lewis Miley's intelligent running, notable in the early stages. We also have to say as well, I mentioned on the last episode that Bruno was trying a bit too hard against Fulham and it wasn't really working. But my word, he was spraying the ball round with abandon at Villa Park, wasn't he? He was fabulous.
Yeah, he was back to his very best, as I thought just about everyone in the Newcastle side was. What I found interesting was that I actually did go to Villa Park last time Newcastle were there before this match. I didn't get George to go there. And what happened on that occasion was that Newcastle were properly turned over, and it was the only time last season where I think that they were actually massively outplayed. The way that Villa approached that, I remember before going to the match, Greg Evans, who covered Villa at the time for us, and I wrote a piece going into the match looking at the game from both clubs' perspectives, and I'd basically said Newcastle will press, so Villa need to not pass the ball out from the back. And he said, "Oh no, Villa do that regardless of who they're playing, what they'll do." And he actually changed Unai Emery. What he did was he tried to bypass the first press by getting Martinez to kick the ball out wide or to the midfield, and basically bypass the initial Newcastle press, and then Newcastle were a bit all over the place. In the subsequent two matches, Villa have evolved in a similar way to Newcastle, only a year behind, is that when Eddie Howe took over mid-season, he got Newcastle to play a certain way until the summer of 2022, then tried to progress them. The summer of 2023, then tried to progress them going forward. Similar with Unai Emery there, and I think that they've changed now. So now it is all about this high line, regardless of who they play. That's how they're going to go about it. But Newcastle, having completely exploited it, certainly in the second half at St James's Park back in August to run away with the match, they did something very, very similar, which was to basically, rather than allow Villa to constrict midfield, is what they seemed to like to do a lot, was to win the ball when they could, really, really pressurise Villa. An analyst who works in football messaged me and said early on, if you look, what Newcastle are specifically doing is either Byrne or Botman is running and pressing John McGinn whenever he gets the ball, and it means there's no out ball for Villa. They have to go back. Then Newcastle would win it back. And when you've got the pace of Isak, Gordon and Jacob Murphy to play in behind that high line, if you get it right, there is so much space to be able to be exploited. And that's exactly how Newcastle got after Villa time and time and time again.
That's exactly what I said, Chris.
Very similar, yeah.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Villa still had a threat, didn't they, Jacob? And Kieran Trippier was back to something like his best, and Dan Byrne was superb again. But let's talk about the man of the night. Everyone needs a Fabian Schär. Named Newcastle's Player of the Month for January, and very nearly the Premier League's first hat-trick scoring defender. He was so close, wasn't he?
I think it's absolutely hilarious because his finishing was so, so poor last year. I think he had the most shots in the entire league last season without scoring a single one. And all of a sudden, he sort of turns into like Gabriel Batistuta in front of goal. It's the volley for the first one which really, really got me. And the coolness of it, because it happened so quickly. You saw the ball in the net and you had to sort of do a bit of a double take of,
yeah,
was that Fabian Schär? No, incredible. At the end, I quite like the way that it is, like, you know that meme from The Hobbit where it's Martin Freeman being like, I'm going on an adventure? Is like Schär just kind of went walkabout right at the end just to be like, I fancy the third goal, get to the far post.
I'm going to have another go at this. Yeah.
He's been a brilliant servant, hasn't he? And you have to say that, you know, that money spent by Rafa Benitez was money very, very well spent. He's so important to the way Newcastle play. He is one of the stories of this season. Brilliant. Who was the last centre-half to score two Premier League goals for Newcastle? There's my quiz for you.
Was it Philippe Albert, George?
Florian Lejeune.
Florian
Lejeune at Goodison Park in that ridiculous game when they scored two late goals. Sorry, Jacob. Sorry.
I put this with an upside down smiley face emoji in our planning chat. The moment it happened, I was like, oh God.
Well,
it's the first time.
I was there for that game, and I was in the away end just completely by coincidence, and I wrote about it. It was just extraordinary. You know, that it was utterly pointless. I mean, the whole draw was pointless. Newcastle were pointless at that point. You know, it was just sort of one of those utterly ridiculous nights, but it felt like the best moment ever when it happened, when Lejeune did it. And now, you know, the significance of it is very different. It felt like, you know, Newcastle getting back to their very best. As Howe said afterwards, we looked like an elite team again, and you know they did. And but Schär, yeah, he's just been an absolutely brilliant player under Howe.
You'll be pleased to know with those Lejeune goals, I was working late in the library trying to file my university dissertation, and it annoyed me so much that I decided to sack it off, go home, and instead file it the next day. It rattled me that much.
Yet again, youth is just wasted on the young, isn't it, Taylor? I mean, it's like, you know, I decided to sack it off and go home and have some biscuits. I mean,
I'm not Eddie Howe, man. I was in my third year of uni. It's more fun than that.
No, I'd have gone out and woke up on the park bench 3 days later with wearing no clothes and stinking of cider.
While we're on youth, I quite like the fact that it is Newcastle's first goal at Villa Park since 2013. And that was when Louis Miley was 6 years old.
Yeah, but you were only eight.
Yeah, true, granted.
Well, that is a good start. In terms of the Schär goals, I mean, we've mentioned exactly how Newcastle were getting in and behind and causing Villa problems. Yet it was the set pieces where the goals came from. I mean, the way that Newcastle forced those set pieces was exactly by that. But then they were clinical from the set pieces after what was possibly the worst corner routine ever for the very first that Newcastle took. It was absolutely abysmal, the short corner. But then Kieran Trippier's delivery was absolutely bang on from that point in the first one. They're two pretty good finishes from Schär. He takes them both well. I know you'd say he should score them, but the second one in particular, after Gordon's shot, which is really unfortunate from the edge of the area, that obviously deflects up under the bar, and then Martinez is sort of taken out a little bit. But Schär directs it basically underneath. He doesn't just hit it. He waits almost and then just positions it underneath Martinez.
I called them thunder prods.
Yeah, I don't know what that is. What is that?
I don't really know. I think I described the first one as a tap-in or something. I can't remember, like on Twitter. So then I've changed that to thunder prod.
I think the first one's an excellent finish because he's being held back as well by the defender, and he's had to force his way through a couple of players, and it comes so quick to him. I think the first one's a great little finish on his right foot, just right in the bottom corner. Nobody's saving it. I thought it was a great goal, the first one. That was a really lovely finish.
He does lots of his best work while falling over, I think. I'm sure last goal, there's a long ranger he did. It might have been ruled out against Everton as he fell backwards.
PSG fell on his arse after he hit it, yeah.
He's just absolutely best. I mean, despite being so composed the rest of his time, he actually does most of his best work while horizontal. Sexy man he is.
Yeah, he certainly wow. is. It's pretty remarkable, really, isn't it, the result, Chris, given our form lines. Our first win, as we said before, first goals at Villa Park since 2013, Ben Arfa and Johan Gufran. Before kickoff, nobody was really giving us a chance, were they?
No, I mean, before kickoff, I do this before matches. I make one of my Google Docs, and in those Google Docs, what I do is I compile sort of stats and interesting points that we may go into a match, and all of them were very, 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 very depressing from a Newcastle United point of view going into this. Obviously, Villa's home form, Newcastle's record there in general, Newcastle's away form this season, Newcastle's current form. There was very, very little to be positive about, and yet that completely turned over and changed. And I think part of the reason behind that is the positivity they took from winning at Fulham. We said hopefully that they can do that and sort of the start of that blueprint to make sure they are solid defensively and to restrict the opposition and then build from there. But I also think that it's a heck of a lot to do with the mini winter break that they've had. This is a refreshed Newcastle. This is what you expected last season between matches, that they would be invigorated and able to go out on the pitch. And you still probably saw in the last 15 minutes maybe that they were tiring a little bit again, and that's they still haven't got the ability to bring loads off the bench and totally change it in that sense, like they did it against Villa in the first game of the season and ran away with it. But what you also saw was the work that's gone in on the training ground and how much that has benefited all of those players. The relationships are strengthening. I thought there was a far better connection between Dubravka and the back four, and I think that's come from that again. The cohesion throughout the entire team, they just looked so much better and so as I say, reinvigorated in that sense. So I think that has made a huge, huge difference.
Mentally, they just needed a break as much as anything, and I think we've seen the benefit of that, as Chris says, since the break. You know, they just needed a chance to clear their heads. And I'm sure physically the break has been good, except as he's, you know, as Chris says, that doesn't mean very much if you're still having to play for, you know, 90 minutes, 95 minutes, 100 minutes. I do think having Jacob Murphy coming back has made a big difference in the sense that, you know, it's a new face, it's a new character, someone who can really sort of engender that positivity into the rest of the team, which he does so well. And, you know, again, having even an unfit or half fit Miggy Almiron on the bench the other night was important because at least then there was that option. But yeah, they just look a different team. So let's hope they can carry that on.
Worked out the statistics for this halfway through the match, and it's quite ridiculous. Newcastle's record after a mini break in their 9 games since the start of last season, won 8 of them, drawn 1. And I think off the top of my head, the aggregate score is 23-4.
Wow.
So, I mean, average that out and it's pretty much a 3-goal win every time.
Very impressive.
Yeah, which, I mean, as they're a front foot, aggressive, physical team who absolutely rely on hard running and relentless pressing. I mean, that is their strength. And so, in some ways, that is startling, Jacob, and I didn't know that. But in some ways, it's sort of not surprising that they've had that record after having a bit of a break midway through the season, because they just need it. You know, physically, it takes such a toll on them the way they play. And that toll becomes obviously far more serious when they don't have players to replace them.
And speaking of that, just as everything was going swimmingly and it looked like nothing could go wrong, Alexander Isak breaks down, Chris.
Yeah, the more things change, the more they stay the same.
Yeah.
And that was the one thing that continues Newcastle United's injury problems. And so Isak goes down, groin injury. We haven't got the full extent of that yet, although he has had multiple groin injuries so far this season. Eddie Howe suggested afterwards that he hopes it isn't serious, but he will be further assessed. It's sounding like it'll be a matter of weeks rather than hopefully months for Isak, but he has had fitness issues, as has Callum Wilson. Obviously, at the minute, Newcastle don't actually have a fully fit out-and-out centre-forward. As of Monday, Callum Wilson wasn't back in full training. Whether that changes by the weekend, we'll have to wait and see. But Anthony Gordon moves through the middle and did very, very well through the middle. But it'll be very different against Luton on Saturday at home against a deep-lying defence to have essentially a false nine as the central player. And the difference here is because immediately your thought is Alexander Isak goes down in the first half. There's 2 days left in the window and the thought becomes, what do Newcastle go and do here? What happened when Callum Wilson went down injured against Manchester City at the start of last season was Newcastle will go into the market and they'll break their transfer record and they're bringing out Alexander Isak. There was none of that this time. There couldn't be. Eddie Howe said afterwards, we basically don't have the ability to do that. The PSR situation, as we've said, once McAlmron wasn't going anywhere, Newcastle can't do anything. And so even if they are taking a risk with the fitness of their two strikers, and they only have three fit senior midfielders still as things stand, that's where they're going to be over the course of the next few weeks. And that is the resources that Eddie Howe has between now and the end of the season.
Yes, of course. And Isak's injury meant that things had to be shuffled slightly. So the third goal was very, very, very important. Miggy on the left with a superb cross from Murphy. We have to say as well, by the way, Miggy Almiron, there's been lots of talk about him in this window. He came on against Villa. He looked white as a sheet when he was stood on the touchline. I thought he looked like a haunted puppet of Miggy Almiron was being brought on and not the man himself. He came on, he ran himself into the ground. The lad has been battling illness over the last week or so. I thought he was fantastic when he came on. And some of the stuff that's been said about him on social media recently hasn't sat very well with me. I haven't liked it at all, considering the amount of work that lad does for the team and what he's brought. So I wasn't very happy about that. But I thought he had a brilliant half when he came on, George.
Yeah, Eddie Howe said afterwards that he was probably at 50% fitness. But, you know, it says a lot about his character that he wanted to be there after illness. I mean, it felt sort of awkward in some ways. And I thought at the time, so he drives to the byline, gets the cross in, and Murphy kind of scores via Moreno, goes off to the Newcastle fans to celebrate, and Miggy hung right back and didn't celebrate to start with, yeah. And then was sort of hauled towards the Newcastle fans, and Murphy pushed him forward, and finally raised his hand. Now, at the time, I kind of thought, there's a player who demands love, but it was actually probably a player that demands a bit of Lemsip. Yeah. If he was just kind of ill. But I also thought there was a bit of sort of, you know, it felt like significant there that this is a guy that actually needs a bit of love now, because, you know, Newcastle have rebuffed offers for Kieran Trippier. Almiron was the one where they thought that if they sold him that they could give themselves a bit of room for manoeuvre, and it didn't happen. Howe never wanted him to go. And now he needs and deserves and warrants a bit of love, because, as you've said, he didn't want to go either. He is incredibly important to the way Newcastle play. When Almiron plays well, Newcastle play well, and that's because he leads from the front. He does the running for the team. He does that targeted pressing. Howe loves him because of that. And, yeah, I just don't think Newcastle should forget where we've come from. And he's been a big part of the team and the club, and will have to be, you know, for the rest of the season. So, well played, Miggy, and pleased you're still here.
I think he just looked a bit pale and anxious, because when he drove towards the byline, he realised he only had an hour to get out of a car park.
Everybody was in a rush.
Yes, Jacob Murphy wasn't happy about it being an own goal, was he, Chris? But I think it's fair enough. It was practically a clearance from him, wasn't it, as the ball came across?
Yeah, I think there's been slightly harsher, because I saw some people sort of saying he almost tried to miss. I thought it was a hell of a ball from Miguel Almiron, but I didn't think it was that easy. He was stretching, and I didn't think it was that easy an opportunity in terms of the way that his body was contorted at the time to sort of try and get it in. I mean, it was an own goal, but yeah, live on air, TNT Sports basically said that to him, and his reply was, ouch, that you're taking.
I think Moreno's reply was ouch as well, actually. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so don't you say ouch to me, mate. I've just lost both testicles.
File him alongside Phil Babb in the one leg either side of the post brigade.
But what a few days for Jacob Murphy as well. Brilliant. I mean, just come back, and the energy he's shown to play twice inside 4 days after being out for so long. I mean, he obviously came back from his... And basically dislocated his shoulder a second time, having been asked to go out and do that again in a similar way to Miguel Almiron, putting the bodies on the line. And he's just... being around the team, it feels like it just lifts everyone. I don't know exactly what it is. I mean, he's a very positive personality behind the scenes.
He's a walking meme, Chris, isn't he? He's a walking meme.
Yeah, well, exactly. And it just, everyone just seems lifted whenever he's there within the group. So I think his impact has actually been quite significant since he's come back.
Yes, and there was a frenetic couple of minutes after Ollie Watkins pulled one back for Villa, shades of their last home defeat against Arsenal when they had a late rally. Some smart changes from Eddie Howe, though, Jacob, put a stop to it, didn't they?
Yep, canny from him. He put Livramento on. Dan Burn had a really good game, but Leon Bailey was a challenge for him, one which Burn rose too well. But obviously, as Burn tired and Villa made their own changes, it became more and more dangerous. And just Livramento just sort of quelled that a little bit and also gave Newcastle a nice counter-attacking outlet as well.
They went five at the back, didn't they? Which, you know, is something that Howe has, you know, thought about before and talked about before. But it was good to see that happen, just close, and great to see them close a game out, because they haven't been able to do that. And I also thought, and Chris talks about Jacob Murphy, you can't talk about Jacob Murphy without talking about the sort of shithousing and all that sort of stuff. I thought Newcastle did, I don't want to use that word necessarily, but I thought they were much better at managing the game, taking this sting out of it, knowing when to kind of go down. I mean, I was worried when that Watkins goal goes in and then another one is then ruled out for offside, because it felt like Newcastle had just lost control or about to lose control, but they brought it back. And, you know, that's been something that historically they've been really, really good at. It was great to see them do it again, particularly against such good opponents.
And I just want to reiterate all of that, but also just in general, how tactically spot on Eddie Howe got it from the very start, but then to change it when he did, because one of the criticisms that there's been of him is that maybe he hasn't changed it when possibly he could have done. That against Man City, should he have changed to five at the back? That was one of the questions that a lot of supporters suggested that he should have done, and obviously the game ended as it did and Newcastle lost. But on this occasion, that he spotted that when Bailey came on, he was given Dan Burn a torrid time, and that what Newcastle needed was they needed the pace of Livramento, they needed the three centre-backs, and having gone in with one game plan which had completely outthought Unai Emery once again, as he did on the opening day of the season, and that worked to a certain period. Emery then responded and had got the upper hand, but Howe found a way within the match to change that and to deal with it. And he said previously that moving to five at the back, he sees often as a negative. Well, on this occasion, it was very much a positive. And Livramento, his pace immediately snuffled out the threat of Bailey. There was only a couple of other runs after that, which and the momentum, it basically broke the momentum, just as Newcastle did with some of the game management, as George said. That slowed Villa's intensity and allowed Newcastle to see it out.
The league table still says we're 11 points behind Spurs and Villa, and we're still very short in midfield and attack, but the mood has changed dramatically. Let's hear on that from Eddie Howe.
Yeah, a lot of pride tonight. I think a lot of positive emotions, where in previous weeks there's been a lot of frustration and different kind of feeling. You know, when you know you're not quite where you want to be and you know that you can achieve more, it's been frustrating, and I'm sure that's been shared by everybody. But tonight we were ourselves. Now the challenge for us is to maintain that and keep that, not let it go, because we know how difficult the Premier League is. You know, tonight we were very focused on having to deliver our best performance against a very, very good Aston Villa team. We can't lose that now for Luton.
Three consecutive away wins and some favourable fixtures coming up. The season's back on, George, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think that's important. I mean, you know, internally they insisted it was, the season was never kind of a write-off, wasn't it? But you know, we needed to see some proof of that, not just in results but in performances, and they've sort of done that. I think if you go back to the Man City game, yes, that ended in a horrible way, but there were signs of positivity there. There's the Sunderland match, that was hugely important. Then Fulham, obviously, really good, still in the FA Cup, and then yeah, it's just a great reminder to all of us that Newcastle are a really good side, and they're a really, you know, they're capable of so much better. There is a huge, you know, there's huge numbers of reasons why they haven't been able to perform the way they have, but it was just really, yeah, it was really encouraging. It was like, yeah, that's the team we know and recognise and love, and it's going to be difficult. You know, it's going to be difficult when they haven't got a centre forward, but let's hope they can continue to find solutions to problems with this bit of respite they've had in terms of fixtures.
Absolutely. Time to kick on. And time to kick on for us as well. We'll be back in just a moment after this short break.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League Two after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League One? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Right then, chaps, on to Becky Langley's Lasses, drawn against Portsmouth in the FA WNL Cup semi-final. And Pompey are having a very similar season to us, so it's top of the league in the FA WNL Premier North versus top of the league in the FA WNL Premier South. Whoever wins that game will be favourite for the Cup, but we are at home, George.
Yeah, that makes a nice change for Newcastle United fans. And yeah, just great, obviously great to see the team get back to winning ways at last weekend. I was with Becky Langley yesterday for 10-15 minutes for a chat, feeling very good again after that very disappointing result against Nottingham Forest, in which they sort of had to do a bit of a reset after that, but feeling very positive. And yeah, great for them. I mean, obviously it's all to play for the women's team in the league, still top of the table, but it's great to have this extra outlet too.
Did your voice just break?
Did I go squeaky?
He actually, when I was up in Newcastle, entered a sort of Dorian Gray-style contract with me. So as my voice is slowly getting deeper, his is eventually going to break more and more as he takes my youth.
I think what's happened, Chris, for reasons that I've already gone into at considerable length, is that my spirit has broken. Not my voice, my spirit. My entire spirit has broken. 47 fucking pages.
Right, and the Lasses have brought in two more players this week. A double eagle swoop with Leah Cataldo and Jamaican international Paige Bailey-Gale joining from Crystal Palace. And as we said on Monday, huge, huge game against Wolves this Sunday, George.
Yeah, and obviously, as we mentioned in that first part of the week, Burnley's result against Forest was a good one. So it's all in Newcastle's hands. It's yeah, it's a big game. Need to get back to winning ways in front of their own fans. I think that's important, and to show that Forest game was a blip. But yeah, I'll be there, really looking forward to it. I'm sure there'll be another big crowd, but if you're prevaricating, if you're hesitating, if you're wondering, is this the weekend when I go and watch the Lasses play at Kingston Park, please do it. It's a brilliant, brilliant occasion. They're a great team to watch. It's really good fun. Take my word for it. If you see me there, come up to me and I'll buy you a hot chocolate. Why am I saying that? I don't mean that. I don't even like hot chocolate.
Or people. No, I do quite like people either.
I don't like people. No. Tell you what, if you spot me and I'm running away from you, it's because I don't want to buy you a hot chocolate. This could cost me thousands.
If you see George, you should go in the opposite direction.
It should be one of those things. If you meet me and you say the following words: Pod on the Tyne, Chris is great, why do you whine? I'll buy you a hot chocolate.
You're a 52-year-old man from Newcastle, not a sphinx.
I'm 53, Jacob.
Oh, I'm sorry, I gave you a bonus.
Right, I'm going to drag this back to reality because it's getting a bit silly. Saturday, 3 p.m. at St. James's Park, Luton Town. Usually sees Newcastle invincible, doesn't it? A 3 p.m. kickoff on a Saturday. But Luton have put the cat amongst the pigeons with a 4-0 win against Brighton, Chris, haven't they?
It said on the run order cut among the magpies, but I see you've just gone for the normal.
Sorry, I didn't even look at that. I just
edited in there.
I don't read every word. I read the first word and I read the last word of the line and I just fill the rest in myself.
You're destroying the magic. Hang on, Luton are the Hatters. So let's put the hat amongst the magpies. That doesn't make much sense, does it?
No.
Put the hat amongst the magpies.
Sounds a bit magician-y.
Yeah.
Anyway, in response to your question, yes, Luton, absolutely huge victory for them over Brighton in midweek, lifted them out of the relegation zone. They're in a decent run of form. I think it's 5 games unbeaten. They will be a challenge. What they did to Newcastle at Kenilworth Road just before Christmas as well, let's not forget it. Jacob was there for that game, and Newcastle were bullied for large parts of that match. They really did look in dire straits at that stage. That's when they were at their very lowest ebb, really, in terms of form. and Luton will take great confidence from that. The you mentioned Newcastle being invincible at 3 p.m. on a Saturday. They had looked invincible at St James's Park until just before Christmas, but they've lost the last two in the league, albeit last time was against Man City, but before that lost to Nottingham Forest. So I still think Newcastle themselves will have great confidence going into this on the back of their own form, but this is not the easy match. It looks like Newcastle have a kind run of fixtures coming up. They've got Luton, they've got Bournemouth, and they've got Nottingham Forest. But actually, Newcastle lost against all three of those opponents so far this season. Yeah, so true. On paper, it looks like a kind run of fixtures, but they actually have to turn up for them.
I mean, it was dire straits at Luton, of course, in that game. So I just wonder if this is a game for a local hero. Oh, come on, it wasn't that.
The opening 5 minutes of this could be interesting, according to what our producer Ollie's written on the running order, and I have no idea why he thinks that.
No, I was wondering. I was hoping you would come to me with it.
Luton scored twice in the first 5 minutes. Oh, good knowledge. Why?
They also have some very funky kickoffs.
How did they score twice when the score was only 1-0?
In their match against Brighton.
In the week. They scored twice. They scored within 18 seconds, I think it was, and then they scored. There were two.
So because they've done that against a different team, that's going to happen in this game.
Exactly.
I'm going to do that bit again.
No, I like this version because I think it makes us all look like absolute morons.
Yes, that's why I'm going to do it again. So the opening 5 minutes of this one could be interesting, couldn't it, Chris? There were 2-0.
No. Let me take this one. Yeah, I mean, that's definitely a reference to Luton scoring two goals within the first 5 minutes against somebody or other.
Cock.
I've got absolutely no fucking idea. But maybe Brighton? Maybe Brighton. So certainly looking forward to the first 5 minutes of this one. Should be really exciting from a football perspective, just to see if Luton can score another real quick two goals and if Newcastle United can prevent them.
It's nice to see that 47 pages of notes has turned into a tactica.
I do feel like we're going to have to perform some sort of intervention after this. Just George's performance on the podcast so far has been interesting.
It's been psychedelic, hasn't it? It's like Freeform Jazz podcast, and that's what George has been doing.
I love Freeform Jazz.
Do you? Why does that not surprise me?
I'm a big jazz head. I'm a massive jazz head.
Are you really?
If we sell him, can we free up a bit of PSR to bring in a new panel member?
Yeah.
It's pure profit.
It really is. I'm like the sort of legacy. I'm one of the legacy players, aren't I? I'm Paul Dummett on the bench. It's like I'm good for team spirit. Am I good for team spirit, though? No, I don't think I am. I think I'm disastrous.
You're more Matt Ritchie than you are Paul Dummett, aren't you? Just more
yeah, I am Matt Ritchie.
And swearing.
Yeah. Raise your game. Raise your game whilst absolutely doing nothing himself. Yeah, that's true. That's a bit harsh because I love Matt Ritchie. But anyway.
Chris, let's wrestle this back to the present. Who the fuck is going to play up front for Newcastle United?
Well, as I spoke about earlier, it looks like certainly Alexander Isak's going to miss this one. Callum Wilson, I think there's an outside chance that he could be involved, but probably more likely to be on the bench. So that would suggest that you would bring Anthony Gordon through the middle, and whether that means that Miguel Almirón comes and starts on the left, as he did when he came on, whereas usually he's played on the right, Freddie Howe, and then Jacob Murphy continues on the right. Or whether they change things up entirely. I mean, they don't even have Joe Linton as an option to put up top. They don't have that depth there. You look at quite a few Newcastle squad and they've got versatile players, but they have so few of them that available and fit at the moment. They have the three midfielders. You might get Harvey Barnes back onto the bench this weekend. There's an outside chance, I think, that Joe Willock could be back involved in some capacity, but I think he's slightly further behind. So I would suggest that it'll be the three that I mentioned, probably Murphy out wide, then Gordon through the middle, and then Almirón on the left. But I think that they'll try and be fluid with that because the other two have spent time through the middle at certain points as well.
Right, then there we go, chaps. I think that's just about it. I would like to apologise on behalf of Pod and the Tyne and apologise to the listener and to our producer, Ollie, for some of the absolute nonsense that has been spoken today. I feel like a ref who's lost control of a game and the players are just doing whatever they want. This isn't usually the case with this podcast, but you've just gone off piece the day, the three of you.
No, I feel like this has been my best performance for quite a long time.
Yeah.
Nobody's.
No one's agreeing with that.
Okay. Nobody's joining in on that. It's not exactly a chorus of approval, but yeah, that's fine.
That's just about it. Thanks very much for your time, lads. Make sure you get in touch with us at Pod on the Tyne on Twitter or X. Email us at podonthetyne@theathletic.com. Thanks for your time, Chris.
You're welcome. I think that this is basically the byproduct of the transfer window in which has been ridiculously busy and nothing has actually happened. So I think that, George and I are both slowly going insane.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing slow about it in my case. I think the proof is fairly evident. I've got to go though. I've got another 29 pages of this document to wade through. So I'm really looking forward to that. May have got it finished by the time the next transfer window opens.
Well, thanks for your time, George, and good luck with that.
Yeah, thank you.
And thank you, Jacob Whitehead, as well. Always a pleasure, never a chore. Nice to see you again.
Thank you. Listeners or followers of me on Twitter may see that I spent last year reading my height in books. I'm doing a similar challenge this year, but it's just reading my width in Google Docs.
Very good.
That's very good.
That's it. Thank you very much for listening. From everybody at Pod on the Tyne, hope you have a good weekend. We shall speak to you on the other side. Take care. Goodbye. Fuck me, Bandy. That was hard.
You didn't even say thank you. You didn't even say thank you to Chris either, but I mean, I think that's fair enough.
Oh, wait, do I need Chris first?
Oh, did you? Oh, there you go.
Jesus Christ.
Just shows.
Were you being intentionally disruptive?
Well, I apologise. I'll have settled down by next week.
The Athletic.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.